أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الأطيبين الأنجبين، بهم نتولى ومن أعدائهم نتبرأ إلى الله. اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة، وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا، حتى تسكنه أرضك تروى وتمتعه فيها طويلا. May Allah tabarak wa ta'ala make this majlis of ours a majlis of learning, a majlis of increasing the ma'rifat and awareness for the well-being of the Imam of time, for the well-being of all mu'mineen, for all the hajat, for whatever mu'mineen have requested, for everyone who has served in whatever manner. Allahu salawat. There was a question, and that is, it's about the wearing of perfumes by the women. Is that permitted or not? Well, the overall ruling is that wearing perfume is good for both men and women. They should be well dressed, they should be good looking, they should be nice, clean, tidy. Wearing perfume, now all these are the required qualities that a mu'min should be possessing. But for women, if the perfume is so loud, which attracts a non-mahram, and in that case, it should be refrained. So anything which is too attractive, that has to be refrained. The other thing is, in the jama'at prayers, if a person joins the jama'at, and then he later found out that he is doing, for example, Isha, when he should be doing Maghrib. So what shall be done? In wajib prayers, you can switch the niyat. For example, I started my asr prayers by mistake, whence it should be zuhr. Now, niyat is something which is done in the heart. So I switch the niyat from asr to zuhr, and then my zuhr is okay. So from any wajib prayers, you can switch niyats. From any wajib prayer, fajr, maghrib, zuhr, asr, whichever. Now, if there was some emergency and you need to come out of prayers, now, breaking prayers, it's haram, it's a sin. But if there's an emergency, you can do it. And if there's no emergency, but you have to break your prayers, then the rule is that you switch your niyat from wajib to mustahab. Just random, change your niyat that I'm doing my nafila of zuhr or fajr or whatever. And now that you've switched your niyat from a wajib to mustahab, then breaking a mustahab prayer is okay. So breaking a wajib prayers, it's haram, it's a sin. Breaking a mustahab prayers is permitted. Switching from wajib to mustahab will make a prayer mustahab, and then you can break. You can switch between wajib prayers, whichever way, and that also would, it's permitted.
Malana, can you go back to that question you answered on perfume, please? Is that okay for Ramadan in Rosa?
Yeah, it's okay. Fasting? Yes, yeah. You can wear perfume while a person is fasting. That's all right.
Men and women both.
Men and women both. Yeah. And the other thing is, we've done almost one third of the sacred month of Ramadan. 10 days have passed. Another 20 days left. So again, another reminder for each one of us to benefit and to make the best of these few days that have left, that have been left, and the time will come soon when that month also has passed away. Yesterday we talked a bit on Dua Iftitah. Some of the phrases of that were explained. And it was mentioned that it is a beautiful Dua. It is reported from the Imam of time. And it is highly recommended that we recite it each night. Now why do we recite it? What is the benefit of that? The least benefit which we get is that we know, we come to know the existence of Allah a bond is created with the existence of Allah, our ma'arif, they elevate, they increase the knowledge that we have regarding tawheed, regarding imamat, that increases in these du'as. And in particular, an attachment with the Imam of time is initiated by reciting that du'a day in, day out, especially in this holy month of Ramadan. Now, the first half of du'a talked about tawheed, and then the second half talks about the intizar al-faraj, or the Imam of time. And we come to this point where it says that Allahumma inna narghabu ilayka fi dawlatin kareema. That, O Allah, we desire, that we wish to be in that establishment, in that dawlat, in that government, which is known as the generous or the kareem government of the Imam, wherein Muslims will be dignified, wherein kuffar will be defamed, that we want to be part of that entity of the Imam. So that is a dua that we have in dua iftitah, and that is addressing straight to the Imam. So the concept of intizar has been mentioned over here, that is waiting for the Imam. Now, we've been waiting for the Imam for the past 1200 years. And there have been nations waiting for the prophets of their time, again, hundreds of years. And we don't know when the arrival is going to be, whether it's going to be soon or late or another 1000 years to go. Now, that is not important when the Imam is going to come. Important is that we stay with the Imam, whether he comes or whether Allah gives us a life, that we witness his rule, witness his establishment, or whether we don't. But if we stay with him, if we stick with him, that is the aim, that is the goal. And someone who adheres, someone who sticks and associates himself with the Imam of time, for him that the ghaibat, it makes no difference whether the Imam is present, whether the Imam is absent, for him it makes no difference. For him that Imam is already present in his livelihood. So that is the whole idea of this intizar, that we have to train ourselves in a way such that the Imam being in absence makes no difference in our life. For us, and many a times, ulama, they also say that this zuhur for many has already taken place. For some people, Imam is not gharib, he is present. That zuhur aam, that is when Imam comes and he will be available for everyone, that has not taken place. But for those khas, for those noble ones, for those special, Imam is present at all times and they can access to the Imam. So faraj, intizar al-faraj, is to wait for the relief. That we are all waiting for that Imam. Why are we waiting? What is the reason for that waiting? Again, that is something we have to ask ourselves. Riwayat, they categorize, even this dua, it categorizes people who are waiting for the Imam into a few groups. Some are waiting for the Imam so that he comes, and then it's going to be an easygoing life, and we also will be easy at that time. Some are waiting for the Imam so that he comes and he puts things right. Like what's happening in Palestine, for example, or the afflictions that are being seen by the people in Pakistan, all these man-made disasters as a result of which millions are just perishing every day. Now, there are a number of people who are waiting for the Imam, especially they want him to come. Why? So that everything is fixed. There is a nation who is waiting because they are attacked, they are afflicted. There are some. This Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar is a tough duty, tough task. They have to run around everywhere, performing the duty. So they're waiting for the Imam so that Imam comes and he does the job and they sit back. So there are different people waiting for, and there is another group which is waiting for the Imam, which is mentioned in this dua iftitah. And that is, Imam, we are waiting for you, we want you to come. Why? So that you grant dignity to Islam and Muslims. So that you defame kuffar and mushrikeen, so that we be part of your entity, so that our aims be your aims, so that whatever you desire, I should desire. This is what we find in this dua iftitah. Now, if we are waiting for the Imam for the three things that were just mentioned, in fact, we are waiting for our own relief, not for the relief of the Imam. We want our own selves to be happy, to be easy, by him coming and returning back, so that we are relieved of our duties. If that's the case, then we have to correct our understanding and thoughts that that is not the relief and faraj of the Imam, but it's the relief and faraj of our own selves. The other thing is that Imam, when he comes, it is not guaranteed that all of us who are waiting, crying, pleading for the Imam, we will stay intact and our faith, it won't change, our ideology won't change, because it was mentioned that the performance of Imam is such that not everyone is able to bear and tolerate the performance of the Imam. The justice of the Imam is such that not everyone can tolerate him. So that is again another dua that we have to have, that especially at that time we don't switch, we don't move from what our faith and what our beliefs and ideas are. Whatever we have, there is this dua adila, which is to be recited by someone who is dying. There in the last bit of the dua says that, Allah, these aqaid that I have, that is the faith in the oneness of God, in the prophethood and in the hereafter, and in Imamat and in the justice of Allah, this package of aqaid that I have, God, I have that aqeedah with me, now I want to safe deposit it with you, because you are the most trustworthy and no one else can be trusted as you can. And then at the end of the dua we say that, God, we have given this aqeedah of ours as a safe deposit, trust to you. We want you to give it back to us when we are in need. So that is the dua that we have in that dua adila. Otherwise, dua adila, shaitan, he attacks at the time of death, especially that he wants to have his people, his numbers large. At the time of death he attacks, but when we have a safe deposit of aqeedah with Allah, then that will be given back to us when we are at time, when we are in need. So that is again another reminder that whatever we have aqeedah in the existence of Allah, Tawheed, Nubuwwah, Imam, Qiyamah, that we ask Allah, God, all this is that we have, keep it with you, give it back to us when we want it. So that is adila, and again another trust and deposit that we have to have with Allah. So it is not guaranteed that if the Imam comes, we will stay with the Imam. If you look back into the different nations, for example, the nation of Musa, the nation of Prophet Isa, the nation of Rasulullah, even the followers of Abu Abdullah, the followers of Amir al-Mu'mineen, they were all people who loved them, who wanted them, who wrote to them, and who wanted them to come. And when they came, when they found that all their benefits and interests are not being met, they declined the invitation. They said, we don't need you. Quran says regarding the Holy Prophet that people in Medina, يَعْرِفُونَهُ كَمَا يَعْرِفُونَ أَبْنَاءَهُمْ. People in Medina, they knew the Prophet as they know their own children. They knew their own children. Now a father, a mother knows their children, what their likes are, their dislikes are, what they love to play with, what their toys are, what they love to wear, what they love to eat, where they love to live, and what their friends are. Everything, the parents, they know about their kids. People in Medina, they knew the Prophet as they knew their own children. Rasulullah was in Mecca, and when he was coming towards Medina, the migration of Rasulullah takes place. These lot of people, they were waiting for him, that he comes and we will support him. But when Rasulullah comes to Medina and starts his mission, and these guys, they see that none of their interests and profits are going to be met, they decline the invitation. We have amazing riwayat that talk about the end of time, and when the Imam returns, that people, they would write to the Imam saying that, we don't need you. Now who are these people? They are not outsiders, they are not strangers. They are like you and me who've been waiting and longing for the Imam. And when he comes, that is what they would say to them. So we ask Allah to secure our Iman, to keep us firm now, to keep us firm then. And this Iman, this love, this devotion that we have with the Imam of time, with Ahlul Bayt, may that never be taken away from us, even for a moment. May that be in this dunya, may that be in barzakh, and may that be in qiyamah. This is the humble request that we have from Allah in these nights of the sacred month of Ramadan. And again, after this dua that we have, we say that, Allahumma inna nashku ilayka faqda nabiyyina. What is that? God, we complain. What is that complaint? That the Prophet is not with us. We've lost the Prophet. So not being present of the Prophet in the nation, it's a disaster. That Imam, he is not with us, it is a disaster, but we don't seem to understand that. Quran that is with us, we can't benefit from the Quran as we should be benefiting. Why? Because the Quran is also in hiding. The Quran is also in ghaibat. It's not as such that it's only the Imam who is ghaib. Quran is also ghaib. Why Quran is ghaib? Quran will be understood when the Imam comes to explain. So now that he hasn't come here, he hasn't explained, Quran is also in hiding, Quran is also ghaib. So a person cannot benefit from that Quran as he ought to benefit because the Imam is ghaib. So there is a whole big disaster, and that is not being of the Imam with us. And Imam being with us, that is the benefit, that is the utmost aim, that is the goal, that is the desire. And that is when a person will be living a life which is that good life, or that hayat al-tayyibah which Quran talks about. So presence of Imam, it's that good. Coming back to our topic, and that was the ascension to prosperity. Quite a lot was mentioned regarding the soul, the qualities that a soul possesses, the merits which it has, the demerits which it has, what should be done to correct and to strengthen the qualities of the soul, what should be done to put away all these demerits and all those negative qualities that are present. The fourth quality, it is the satanic temptations, waswasa, that is, that exists in an individual. That is, no one is free from these temptations. To whatever level a person may be at, this shaitan, he tempts, he attacks, and that waswasa is there at all times. It is like a house having numerous doors, and you find numerous, a large number of people entering that house through all of those doors. This soul that we have, it has so many inputs, and shaitan attacks from every side. Not just one side, not just one door, from every door, and comes in swarms, in large numbers, and all these ideas, these waswasa, these temptations that come across every now and then, it is because of these temptations and waswasa of that shaitan. Especially at the time of prayer, you find that we find that we start the prayer with an intention that God, we want to do this good service right through that salam and the last takbir. The moment takbiratul ihram is done, half of the surah is done, or by the time we reach the ruku, it's all gone. Shaitan has already attacked from all these different angles, from all these different sides, and that is waswasa, that is temptation. And waswasa, it is not as such that it attacks only at one angle. It's all these different things that can happen. So these thoughts that come across to our minds, to our hearts, they are to occupy that heart of an individual so that Allah's rule and His kingdom is undermined. There is a hadith from the Holy Prophet. He says that in the heart of man, two types of thoughts, they enter. One, it's from the king, that is the existence of Allah, thoughts that invite to goodness, to purity, to tayyibat. And there are thoughts that are pumped into this individual through shaitan. Those thoughts that come from Rahman are known as ilham. Those thoughts that come from shaitan are known as waswasa. So these two again go side by side. And again, this ilham and waswasa, these satanic temptations, and the ilham that we have from Allah. Ilham, it invites you to good actions, to being good. Waswasa, towards everything which is negative. And then Rasulullah says that shaitan, he is so close to us. It's like this blood which flows in us. Blood which is flowing us in our veins. How close is that? Says, وَالشَّيْطَانْ الَّذِي يَجْرِي فِي عُرُوقِكُمْ. That shaitan, he is so close to us, as if he is flowing in our veins. And someone who is so close to us, flowing within our veins, getting rid of that, it's tough. And then he says that, you want to get rid of shaitan who is so close to you and who is flowing in your body, in your veins. So what do? You narrow those veins so that the movement paths of shaitan, they are narrowed, and it becomes tough for him to move. So if there are temptations, just take no notice of it. Just don't care. If there are these temptations that hit every now and then, just keep on flickering and changing your mind, or by the recitation of Astaghfirullah, by remembering God, that those temptations can be put aside. Now, because Shaitan, he is a sworn enemy, he has said in Quran that wa inna hadha sirati mustaqiman fattabi'uhu wa la tabghur. Says that he says that I will sit on your path, that is the path of Allah. لَأَقُدَنَّ لَهُمْ سِرَاتَكَ الْمُسْتَقِيمَ. I will sit on your straight path, on your right path, and I will deviate your people. And who are an exception? إِلَّا عِبَادَكَ مِنْهُمُ الْمُخْلَصِينَ. But those people who are the pure. There's this definition of مُخْلَصِينَ in Quran. مُخْلَصِينَ are the sincere, the pure. What is the difference between mukhlas and mukhlis? Mukhlis are the sincere people, the pure people, the noble ones. And among these mukhlisin, the top-notch or the best quality, among those mukhlisin are the mukhlasin. And mukhlasin, shaitan has no access to them. And mukhlas, a person becomes after passing through those stages of mukhlisin when he has purified himself. So, this waswasa, it has to be corrected. And that waswasa, if a person takes no notice of it, it would end up to ghaflat. And that ghaflat, again, if you remember, it was mentioned that it would end up in losing iman and losing faith. There is this hadith, again, from the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. There are certain things which make shaitan attack us or for these waswasa to take place, these temptations to take place. Hadith says that إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَغْضَبُ الشَّابَ الْفَارِغَ, that Allah, He hates a young person who does nothing. When he does nothing, then those temptations from all sides will attack him and he will fall into indecency. So no one should be left doing nothing at all times. We have to keep ourselves occupied all the time. If it's study, study. If it's work, work. If there's nothing, then start by the remembrance of Allah. The moment we find that we are doing nothing, you find that shaitan attacks most. That is that waswasa which takes place. Nowadays, we see that, what are you doing? I'm busy, busy, busy. What is that? Chatting on the Facebook. Chatting on the internet. So that is busy, busy. That's not busy. That is again another way how shaitan has caught us, by keeping us busy and by those chattings. So that is again another tactic that shaitan has. And we have to compensate all of that shortfall, Ma'asum says, by remembrance. That you remember Allah, and that shortfall, which is you've got some time open, that will be patched up by that remembrance of Allah, and that way shaitan also will not enter our existence, our entity. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ اتَّقَوْا إِذَا مَسَّهُمْ طَائِفٌ مِّنَ الشَّيْطَانِ تَذَكَّرُوا فَإِذَا هُمْ مُبْصِرُونَ. That when some people from among the mu'mineen who fear Allah, who are God-wary, when shaitan attacks them, what do? تَذَكَّرُوا. They remember. Who do they remember? They remember God. The moment they remember God, shaitan who has attacked him, shaitan also flees away, he runs away. So that is the same thing which was mentioned earlier, that Rasulullah says that shaitan who is so close to us, as if he is flowing in our veins like our own blood, you have to narrow those veins so that he doesn't move easily. That passage of shaitan has to be narrowed. Elsewhere says that, if you want to protect yourself from waswasa, from those temptations, ala bidhikrillah tatma'innul qulub, that it is by the remembrance of Allah, hearts are at rest. So why does it say hearts are at rest? Shaitan, when it attacks the heart becomes restless. The heart, there is no comfort in that. We want a comfortable heart, and that is by the remembrance of God, by the remembrance of Ma'asumeen, by the recitation of Quran, so on and so forth. Now, there are praised thoughts that we ought to look into them, and there are various kinds of it. But if we have a note of these thoughts, And whenever we find that shaitan is attacking us, or that waswasa is there, those temptations are there, we come to this point. And that is zikr qalbi. That is, in our hearts, we remember Allah. That is, within the heart, you call Imam Zaman 1,000 times. Or make it a habit that whenever we are doing, it is possible. You know, the psychiatrists, they say that by nature, man, he can do more than one thing at one time. For example, you are watching the TV, you're also chatting, you're also looking on the internet, you are having coffee, you can have some biscuits, you are answering the phones also. So many things are being done at one time. But none of them is going to be perfect. But it is possible. And by practice, you will come to a point that you will do more than one things at one time and of a high good quality. The same thing is with us, that if we make a habit that we are doing things at the same time, this heart of ours, it's resting somewhere else. It's calling the Imam of time. It's calling Allah. It's remembering Allah. That is possible. For example, if someone has passed away who's been so dear to us, we find that no matter what we are doing in our daily schedule, that person who has passed away, we constantly remember him. The nearer that person is, the more we remember. And it is not as such that by we being reminded of that person who has died, who has passed away, our daily schedule, it's not functioning properly. It's functioning, everything is functioning, job is there, schools are there, household is there. But this heart of ours, it's constantly remembering that person. So that is possible. By practice also, we can do it in a way that we do whatever we are doing every day. But that heart of ours remembers the Imam of time, calls the Imam of time. And if we make it a habit, this palpitation, which is just a beat, with nothing in there, no tune, no rhythm in it, we can change the beat to it saying, Ya Sahib al-Zaman. That instead of having a beat, it calls Imam, it calls Abul Fazl, it calls Amir al-Mu'mineen. So that way we can change, like you change the ringtones of your mobile phones, you can change the ringtone of your heart. So that again is possible for us. So that zikr qalbi, that is the remembrance in the heart. If we have that, these temptations and these waswasas, they could be put aside. Then, pondering into the religious issues, the teachings that are haq, the ethics, the ahkam, that Allah, He has this grand creation. In this grand creation, what is my role? Where do I stand? What do I do? Where have I come from? Where am I heading to? So all these are questions, if we have them answered, again, أَلَا بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ تَتْمَئِنُّ الْقُلُوبِ, that heart will be at rest. And then reminding that this dunya, it wasn't loyal to anyone, nor will it be loyal to me, nor will it remain for me, it didn't remain for anyone. So these things, if they are taught to the heart will be at rest, and the rest of the heart is shaitan being away. And then says that look into your own performance, that what has reduced the distance between him and his Lord, the rewards that are waiting for us in the hereafter. If we look into all of these issues that have been mentioned, we can find that we can secure our hearts, we can save our hearts to a certain extent. We have all gathered here tonight, which is the 10th of the sacred month of Ramadan. It's the wafat of the lady Hazrat Khadija alayha salam, the mother wife of the Holy Prophet, mother of Hazrat Zahra alayha salam, and her name is Khadija, the daughter of Khuwaylid. And among the greatest women of this entire creation of Allah, and says that there are four women who are the best. One is her, one is her daughter, one is Hazrat Maryam, and the fourth one is Asiya, the wife of Fir'aun. For the performance of the miraculous tasks and services which they provided, they've been exalted to a level that Allah says that they are the best of the women. Wealth-wise, she is the richest entrepreneur of the Arabian Peninsula of that time, the richest tycoon, and historians, they say that they have described her wealth as she possessing 80,000 camels at that time. So such a rich woman. She took people in partnership in her trades. Her trades were not just in Arabia, they were on international levels. A great big businesswoman, import, export, and her greatness, honorable background, growing wealth, made many admire her, and many wanted to marry her, and many proposals were there from Quraysh, from the heads of Quraysh, and she was given the title of Umm al-Sa'aliq, Umm al-Aitam, that is, the mother of the orphans, the mother of the destitutes, because of all the services which she had provided to the orphans, to the destitutes, to the needy, to the poor, by her good performance. Abu Talib was a poor man, but great, very highly respectable among all, and he saw that his nephew, that is the Holy Prophet, he has reached the age of marriage, he should get married now, but little he could do. He didn't have the wealth, he couldn't get him married, nor the Prophet had funds to get married. He proposed, like every other good person, every other man who worked for him, to work for Khadija, to save some money, and then to get married. And with the Prophet the Prophet would get the arrangements for the marriage to be made. Now the Prophet, he accepted, and Abu Talib went to Khadija, proposes that to take him as one of his employees, for him to work for her, and she also accepts, because of the trustworthiness of the Prophet, because of the character of the Prophet, his abilities, etc. She accepted, and his wage also was agreed to 2 to 4 young camels in a month. That was how they were paid. Normally it was half, but because of the services and the performance of Rasulullah was so good that she paid him double. The Prophet, along with the caravans, they set off to Sham, to Syria. And there, this is being reported, quoted from Manaqib ibn Shahrashu. He says that on one of these festivals in Masjid al-Haram, where the women had gathered to celebrate, a Jew addresses them that very soon a prophet is going to come to this land who will be appointed by Allah, by God, to you, O women. And then he says, I address you women, that Jew addresses the women saying that I address you all, that bless your homes with his footsteps, with the footsteps of the Prophet. Now there were all these women, many of them or none of them accepted, but this word of that Jew hit the heart of Khadija. And from that day, she was a bit restless and she was just waiting for that opportunity for that Prophet to step in that town and for his steps to step into her house, for her house to be blessed with his presence. In other books of history, that of Ibn Hisham, the trustworthiness, the good character of the Prophet was so much renowned that she herself invited the Prophet to join her trade so that Rasulullah becomes his employee and works for her. And in one of these trips where she sends her people on trade, she sends her slave, and that is Maysara, with the Prophet, and orders Maysara to obey him unconditionally. Whatsoever he says, he should be at the service of the Prophet. Now the Prophet's uncles, all of them, went to say farewell and requested other members of the caravan to take care of this young lad, which is the Holy Prophet. And it says that wherever they stopped throughout this journey of business, it was a downpour of favors and barakat and blessings from all sides. And he says that I calculated, I saw what we gained, the profit we got in this trip cannot be matched to whatever was gotten sought in the previous trips. Now the historians, they report that when this caravan reached Shamiya or Basri, there Nastura, a monk from one of those temples over there, he sees a cloud sheltering the Holy Prophet. And then that caravan wherein the Rasulullah was, he calls Maysara and says, who is that? He says he's a young lad who's come from Arabia. He's in this trip, he is representing Khadija, that great big business tycoon. And this monk inquires and then says that the one seated, because Rasulullah at that time was sitting under a tree, He says, by God, the one seated under a tree with that cloud sheltering him, it's none but a prophet. And very soon you will all know that he is a prophet. Maysaram, when he gets this message from that person and sees the signs that he has told, this cloud sheltering the Prophet all the time, he was just waiting for that opportunity to get to Makkah and be the first one to give the news to Khadija. On his way back, he counts days, and when they come to Makkah there, Khadija, she's also amazed to see that there is a cloud which is following someone, which is over someone. She was waiting to see who that is, and Maysara, he comes and says to her, that is that Prophet, that is Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, who was representing you on this trade of yours. And this is what those people said, and what she had heard in that festival from that Jew, that Prophet is going to come soon, and whoever graces her home with his footsteps will be blessed. That desire for her to marry the Prophet also strengthens at this time. She wants to marry him. And then it so happens that Abu Talib, he proposes to her. And then she sends one of the women who was known in Mecca to propose to her. Her name is Nafisa, one of the well-known women in Mecca, and expressed her desire to mediate so that she too approaches the Prophet to marry him. And then it so happens that here the wedding takes place, and the person who recites the khutbah, the aqda of Hazrat Khadija, is Abu Talib. In a beautiful way, he recites this khutbah aqd. The Prophet at that time, he is 25 years of age. And the dowry, the mahr that is set, it's 20 camels or 500 dirhams, which is 500 silver coins. That was the mahr of Khadija. The Prophet is comforted by the presence of Khadija. She is comforted by the presence of the Prophet. And then you find that she is elevated to a rank where Allah says she is one of the four best women of the entire creation. Yeah. And it so happens that Rasulullah, when he is returning from Mi'raj, because Rasulullah, he has many ascensions to the heavens, in one of these trips, says that, I have a message to you, Jibreel. Says, yes, what is that? Says that, I want Allah, tabaraka wa ta'ala, to send his salams to Khadija. And that wish also was granted. Imam Ali alayhi salam says that once in the presence. Once in the presence of his wives, that is, the presence of the wives of the Prophet, Khadija's name was mentioned, and the Prophet starts weeping. Aisha says that, why do you cry when her name is uttered? And she starts taunting Khadija, and then says she was an old lady from Bani Asad. In reply, the Prophet says that she accepted me, my invitation, when you all rejected, that is including her, that is Aisha. Says that she embraced Iman whence you all were kafir. Says she brought me a child whence you all remain barren even till today. And after that, whenever Aisha wanted something from the Prophet, she said, Prophet, Ya Rasulullah, by Khadija, this is my desire, this is my wish. So initially her tactic was such, and after seeing the words of Prophet, she also changes. Now, 10 years after the marriage of Rasulullah with Khadija, when he is now 35 years of age, Kaaba, it is renovated. The walls of the Kaaba were short, were not too high, and there were these thefts and burglaries which were happening over there. There wasn't any roof to that. The Kaaba, it was renovated. The walls were raised, a roof was put on that. And Khadija, she, whatever she had, all the wealth which she possessed was given to Rasulullah, and that is for the propagation of Islam. Or in a way, if we see that whatever of Islam we have today, That is the support of her, that is the wealth of her, because Rasulullah, he wasn't rich, he was a poor person. So whatever she possessed, she gave away. Now a lady with all those wealths, with all those riches which she possessed, a time comes that she is in that Shi'b Abi Talib, the valley of Abu Talib, and for 3 years they were in tough situations. And in those days, she fell ill, and about 10, 11 or 12 days after the demise and passing away of Abu Talib alayhi salam, she also passes away. Her passing away hurt the Prophet a lot, because two strong supporters of Rasulullah have now gone. One is Abu Talib, the other is Khadija. And that year he names as Amul Huzn, the year of grief. And at that time, this lady who fed everyone and who was named as the mother of all orphans, the mother of all destitutes, lives a time, a tough situation where even the basic requirements and needs, which is food and drink, wasn't available for her. And when it comes to the shroud, when she passes away, that shroud also wasn't available, but that shroud was sent to her from the heavens. Because Rasulullah, the aba which he had, her wish was that she be buried in that aba of Rasulullah, be wrapped in that. But because that coffin also was incomplete, and there weren't any means for her to be covered, he requests and Allah, he sends that coffin from the heavens for her. When she dies, the grave is dug, Rasulullah gets in the grave, lies down for a while, and then comes out, buries her, and there the grief of Rasulullah starts. At that time, Hazrat Zahra, she is a young toddler. Over here we find that she passed away, but up to a certain extent, a respectable funeral took place. There was someone to bury her. There was someone to shroud her. There was someone to pray on her. But when we look into the tragedies which unfold after her, after Rasulullah, one after the other on this household of Wahiyah, this is not the situation. All that honor, that dignity which they possessed was seized away, was taken away by the so-called people of that time. We talked about waiting for the Imam, that is the faraj of the Imam. And we ask Allah, by those toddlers of Aba Abdullah who were waiting for Aba Abdullah on the day of Ashura, who was the Imam of their time. And it was as such that whenever everyone had perished, everyone had died, no one was left. It was Aba Abdullah alone in that battlefield, on his horse. Now because there is a large number of women and children in the camps, for them to be comforted, once in a while he on his horse comes towards the camps, says La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah loudly, and then goes back to fight. Now the reason why he does that is that they be comforted that this great buzurg of their household, he is alive, so they are at rest. They say that a time comes that the horse comes and there is no rider on it. Sakina, she comes to the horse and says that, I know that my father, he's dead. Ya Jawad Abi, hal suqiya abi am qutila atshana? Tell me, O loyal horse of my father, was he quenched? Or did he die of thirst? And then they say that she asked the question from the horse. The horse didn't answer. The answer was received from the head of Aba Abdullah, saying that Shi'ati mahma sharibtum ma azbin fadhkuruni aw sami'tum bighareebin aw shaheedin fandibuni. Whenever you drink a sip of water, do remember, do remember. O Allah, by these toddlers of Aba Abdullah who were waiting for the Imam of their time, bless us, help us in this era, in this period of waiting, and may the Imam of time arrive soon. May we be enlisted among His true supporters, among His true servants, and this imam, this love, this devotion that we have with the imam, may that never be taken away, be seized away from us, no matter when that be, in this dunya, barzakh or qiyamah. We'll continue with the recitation of dua iftitah. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم إني أفتتح الثناء بحمدك وأنت مسدد للثواب بمنك وأيقنت أنك أنت أرحم الراحمين في موضع العفو والرحمة وأشد المعاقبين في موضع النكال والنقمة وأعظم المتجبرين في موضع الكبرياء والعظمة اللهم أذنتني في دعائك ومسألتك فاسمع يا سميع مدحتي وأجب يا رحيم دعوتي وأقل يا غفور عسرتي فكم يا إلهي من كربة قد فرجتها وهموم قد كشفتها وعسرة قد أقلتها ورحمة قد نشرتها وحلقة بلاء قد فككتها الحمد لله الذي لم يتخذ صاحبة ولا ولدا ولم يكن له شريك في الملك ولم يكن له ولي من الذل وكبره تكبيرا الحمد لله بجميع محامده كلها على جميع نعمه كلها الحمد لله الذي لا مضاد له في ملكه ولا منازع له في أمره الحمد لله الذي لا شريك له في خلقه ولا شبيه له في عظمته الحمد لله الفاشي في الخلق أمره وحمده الظاهر بالكرم مجده الباسط بالجود يده الذي لا تنقص خزائنه ولا تزيده كثرة العطاء إلا جودا وكرما إنه هو العزيز الوهاب اللهم إني أسألك قليلا من كثير مع حاجة بي إليه عظيمة وغناك عنه قديم وهو عندي كثير وهو عليك سهل يسير اللهم إن عفوك عن ذنبي وتجاوزك عن خطيئتي وسفحك عن ظلمي وسترك على قبيح عملي وحلمك عن كثير جرمي عندما كان من خطئي وعمدي أسمعني في أن أسألك ما لا أستوجبه منك الذي رزقتني من رحمتك وأريتني من قدرتك وعرفتني من إجابتك فصرت أدعوك آمنا وأسألك مستأنسا لا خائفا ولا مجلا مدلا عليك فيما قصدت فيه إلي فإن أبتع عني عتبت بجهدي علي ولعل الذي أبتغني هو خير لي لعلمك براقبة الأمور فلم أر مولا كريما أصبر على عبد لئيم منك علي يا ربي إنك تدعوني فولي عاد وتتحبب إلي فأتبغض إليك وتتودد إلي فلا أقبل منك كأن لي التذول عليك فلم يمنعك ذلك من الرحمة لي والإحسان إليك والتفضل علي بجودك وكرمك فارحم عبدك الجاهل وجد عليه بفضل إحسانك إنك جواد كريم الحمد لله مالك الملك مجري الفلك مسخر الرياح فالق الإصباح ديان الدين رب العالمين الحمد لله على حلمه بعد علمه والحمد لله على عفوه بعد قدرته والحمد لله على طول عناته في غضبه وهو قادر على ما يريد الحمد لله خالق الخلق باسط الرزق فالق الإصباح ذي الجلال والإكرام والفضل والإنعام الذي بعد فلا يرى وقرب فشهد النجوى تبارك وتعالى الحمد لله الذي ليس له منازع يغادله ولا شبيه يشاكله ولا ظهير يغاضده قهر بعزته الأعزى وتواضع لعظمته العظمى فبلغ بقدرته ما يشاء الحمد لله الذي يجيبني حين أنادي ويستر علي كل عورة وأنا أعصي ويعظم النعمة علي فلا أجازي فكم من موهبة هنيئة قد أعطاني وعظيمة مخوفة قد كفاني وبهجة مونقة قد أراني فأثني عليه حامدا وأذكره مسبحا الحمد لله الذي لا يهتك حجابه ولا يغلق بابه ولا يرد سائله ولا يخيب آمله الحمد لله الذي يؤمن الخائفين وينجي الصالحين ويرفع المستضعفين ويدع المستكبرين ويهلك ملوكا ويستخلف آخرين والحمد لله قاسم الجبارين مبير الظالمين مدرك الهاربين نكال الظالمين صريخ المستصرخين موضع حاجات الطالبين معتمد المؤمنين الحمد لله الذي من خشيته ترعد السماء وسكانها وترجف الأرض وعمارها وتموج البحار ومن يسبح في غمراتها الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله الحمد لله الذي يخلق ولم يخلق ويرزق ولا يرزق ويطعم ولا يطعم ويميت الأحياء ويحيي الموتى وَهُوَ حَيٌّ لَا يَمُوتُ بِيَدِهِ الْخَيْرُ وَهُوَ عَلَى كُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٌ اللَّهُمَّ صَلِّ عَلَى مُحَمَّدٍ عَبْدِكَ وَرَسُولِكَ وَأَمِينِكَ وَسَفِيِّكَ وَحَبِيبِكَ وَخِيَرَتِكَ مِنْ خَلْقِكَ وحافظي سرك ومبلغي رسالاتك أفضل وأحسن وأجمل وأكمل وأزكى وأنمى وأطيب وأطهر وأسنى وأكثر ما صليت وباركت وترحم وتحننت وسلمت على أحد من عبادك وأنبيائك ورسلك وصفوتك وأهل الكرامة عليك من خلقك اللهم وصل على علي أمير المؤمنين ووصي رسول رب العالمين عبدك ووليك وأخي رسولك وحجتك على خلقك وآيتك الكبرى والنبأ العظيم وصل على الصديقة الطاهرة فاطمة سيدة نساء العالمين وصل على سبتي الرحمة وإمامي الهدى الحسن والحسين سيدي شباب أهل الجنة وصل على أئمة المسلمين علي بن الحسين ومحمد بن علي وجعفر بن محمد وموسى بن جعفر وعلي بن موسى ومحمد بن علي وعلي بن محمد والحسن بن علي والخلف الهادي المهدي حججك على عبادك وأمنائك في بلادك صلاة كثيرة دائما اللهم وصل على ولي أمرك القائم المؤمل والعدل المنتظر وحفه بملائكتك المقربين وأيده بروح القدس يا رب العالمين اللهم اجعله الداعي إلى كتابك والقائم بدينك استخلفه في الأرض كما استخلفت الذين من قبله مكن له